I grabbed onto the railing to dust beyond it, and I fell 14 feet head first. And it could have killed me, because when you fall like that, your bones break and then you have internal injury. So my pelvis shattered, my back broke, but it was a miracle. I mean, it took months and years to recover from those injuries, but there's nothing like perspective when you have a life-threatening accident to really look at your life and say, what am I going to do?
Hello there, I'm Yonka Kamara. Welcome to Kume Turning Point Diaries, where we share stories of critical moments in our personal and professional lives. We have all heard the phrase, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade, right? Well, making lemonade is not always the easiest thing to do. In this week's episode, we have an inspiring conversation with Susan Wheeler about lemons life has thrown her way and how she was able to use those lemons to make her life sweeter. Susan is a lifelong entrepreneur, mindset coach, author of The Lemonade Diet, mom of four, and grandmother of seven. She shares the circumstances that led her to get married and become a mom before the age of 18, and the debilitating accident that shattered her pelvis and broke her back, yet she bounced back and became a competitive runner. Her story encourages us to embrace change, face our fears, let things go, and live our full potential. I want to point out that Susan is a listener of Kume Turning Point Diaries, and she reached out to me to share her story. So if you're listening right now and you have a story to share, please reach out to me at turningpointdiaries@gmail.com. Again, that's turningpointdiaries@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing your story. And now for the episode.
Hello, Susan. Welcome to Kume Turning Point Diaries. So happy to have you.
I'm happy to be here, Yelka. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to let our listeners know that you are one of the first people I'm having on the show that I have not had a direct contact with. You're, in fact, the listener who reached out to me, and I'm so, so grateful for that. And I'm so happy to have you, because this is exactly my intention for the show, right? It's my intention to have people listen to the show, listen to the stories, and see themselves, right? And hopefully feel empowered enough to share their own stories and lessons. And so I'm so grateful that that resonated with you and you reached out, and here we are having a conversation.
Absolutely. I love it. I love your format and how you have people share their stories and how their stories have transformed their life.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I'm excited for you to share your story. But before we get into your story, could you please just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, where you are right now, and how you're coping with everything that's going on in the world?
Sure. Well, I live in Connecticut in the northwest corner, so it's so beautiful here. And we live on an organic farm. We have a 26-acre organic vegetable farm. And it's pretty cool to... right now, with everything that we're going through, to live right in this area. I always felt a little bit like we lived so out there, out in the sticks, as people say around here. But it's really super nice now, because my world doesn't seem much different. I work online with my nutrition business. I'm a writer, so everything I do is here and on my computer, and of course our farm. But we sort of live in this little bubble that I'm aware of everything that's going on. It's not that, but it hasn't really affected me. And there are different things. I'm not traveling like I used to, those type of things. But I live in, as I call it, God's country, and I hike more, so I'm outdoors a lot. So I've been fine.
I've been to Mystic, Connecticut. So I grew up with my father taking me and my younger siblings up there to ride our bikes and stuff. And so I'm familiar with the beauty of Connecticut and whatnot. And I can only imagine it's probably just a a haven right now, given, you know, everybody just trying to get away and have more space. So you're very fortunate to have that.
It is so true. And where we live is a very weekend community. So a lot of people that live in the city do have homes here. So our particular town has about 3,000 residents, but only 1,500 live here year round. So, but now we're seeing more people from the city staying here because they can go outdoors. They can do more. You can move about more freely. That's why I was so intrigued when you said you lived in the city, because we just have to chat about that. I'm always curious to find out what everyone's doing. But for me, living here like I do, I have all my kids home and they're all grown up now. So I'll always call them my kids, and they all work. So they're not home. I'm not taking care of anyone, but they're living here. And it's nice because my husband and I felt when we got to this point that we might go somewhere else. We might move somewhere else. And now I'm glad that we have kept this home base for everyone. It's really kind of cool.
Yeah, that's great. You know, so you never know, right? Never know. So you
never know.
Yeah. So you, how many kids do you have?
Four.
Four kids. Okay. And they're all grown.
All grown, ages 18, 20, 27, and 39.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then seven grandchildren.
Oh my goodness.
And I'll get the ages wrong, so I'll just tell you they're ages 7 to 19.
7 to 19, okay, wow.
And everything in between.
And you look great.
Thank you.
Wow. But I also know that you were also a very young young mom, and we're going to get into that in a little bit.
Sure.
But yeah. I think this is a great segue into your story now, because you mentioned that you're a writer, and you recently wrote a book called The Lemonade Diet. And I, you know, you were kind enough to send me parts of the book. And in it, you know, you really talk about, you know, learning from life's lemons. So we all know the phrase, you know, make lemonade out of lemons and whatnot. Can you tell us about one of the lemons and what you've made out of it?
Sure. Is there anything in particular, or do you want me to tell anything?
So, I mean, I think using the lemon as a metaphor for a critical moment in your life. In your writing, you talk about one of the critical moments being the passing of your father and what that impact has been on your life. So can you
sure.
talk about that as a lemon?
Absolutely. So lemons happen to all of us, right? And when I wrote this book, The Lemonade Diet, the reason the name comes from, it's a mindset. We're always thinking of diet and nutrition and things like that. But one of the most important things that we fail to really address is our mindset. And all the things that happen in our life, we can choose to look at a pile of lemons or we can make lemonade, right? So probably one of the biggest things, the first thing when my dad died, I was 16 years old. And he had gone into the hospital on Friday because his shoulder was bothering him. And he thought, and of course I heard this story afterwards because we were younger and my parents didn't want to tell us. So he felt like he was having a heart attack, and they assured him that he was fine, that he just had pulled a muscle or something. And so he went home to, you know, just to rest. And 2 days later, when no one was in the house, we had all gone off and done our things, jobs or whatever, he died of a massive heart attack. So up until the Friday before he died, he didn't have any health issues. He was never on any kind of medication and things like that. And so it was a shock to all of us, to say the least. He was 49 years old. My brother had just graduated from high school. I was going into my senior year of high school, and my sister was going into her freshman year. And it was just one of those things that it, and I'll just back up for a second. the year, the summer before, one of the girls in my class, her dad died that summer. And she was the youngest, and she had siblings that were older. So her parents were a little older, but her dad did die of a heart attack. It was suddenly. And I remember going back to school, and it had happened sort of the same time. And this was a year before, thinking, oh my gosh, you know, this was someone I knew and her dad had died. And I thought, this only happens to other people. And I really clearly remember thinking that. And then a year later, it happened to me. And it was really eye-opening, because I think when we're kids, we just don't expect that, right? And it wasn't like we were watching him be sick and we were prepped and expecting it. Here I was starting my senior, 1 week before my senior year of high school. So it was really tragic. I'd never lost anyone close to me before. So death was new to me, and it was new to my family. And it was pretty horrible, in the sense that just, I think the way we all dealt with it. I think now if I lost my husband, my family would all hug. We would all literally and figuratively come together. But those are the lessons that I've learned. But at the time, my family was not like that. I really can remember all of this like it was yesterday. It was 40 years ago that he died. We would all cry in our own room, in our own bed, alone. And we could hear, I could hear my mother crying, I could hear my brother crying, I could hear my sister crying, and no one came together. And I know in my family now, we would all be piled together, whether it was in one bed or on one couch or in one room, whatever it might be together, to help each other. So when that happened, and I'm a Libra, I love people. I love everyone to get along. And it was really hard for me, the kind of person that I was, even as a kid, to feel like we were all so separated. And it wasn't because we didn't love each other, or it wasn't because we hated each other. No one had issues with each other. We just never had that bond. And I had talked to my mom years later, and she had said to me, her and my dad married when they were in their 30s. And at the time, that was old, older to get married. And she said, because I said to her, Mom, you know, I know we all love each other, but you never said, you know, I love you. I hang up the phone with my kids and I say, I love you every single time. They say it to me. It's just the way we are. And she said, well, when your dad and I got married, we were older and we just never felt like we wanted you to get too attached to us in case anything should happen. And I thought, that's awful. That is just so weird to me. So my feeling at the time that, you know, I was a little different was right, but it led me right out the door. And I got married while I was in high school to my teacher, who was twice my age.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And today it would have been completely illegal, right? There would have been, but no one said anything. Nobody made a big deal about it. He was a great teacher. He was the most popular teacher in the school. And in hindsight, I could tell you a different story. What, you know, but at the time I just felt loved, you know, he had a home and a place to live, and he was secure. He was a teacher and the head of his department. And I left and I got married and we had a baby.
Are you guys still married? And also, did you have a relationship with him prior to your dad passing, or was he the one that you leaned to once your father passed, as like,
yes,
for comfort? Is that where your relationship, yes, kind of took off?
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened. He had everyone knew that my dad had died. So the whole staff in the school had been, you know, because I didn't really have to go back right away, but I wanted to because I didn't want to stay home where everybody was crying by themselves. So I got back into school, but it was a rough start for me. And he was a teacher. He was my teacher at one point. So I was friendly with him. I knew him. And he took advantage of a 17-year-old girl who was going through a really tragic time. And I don't want to say horrible things about him. We're not married. We were married for about 2 years. We got divorced after my daughter was born. She was about a year old. And he died 7 or 8 years ago. So
I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm sorry to hear.
Yeah. So he did. And we weren't married. We remained friends because we had our daughter and of course our collective grandchildren together. But it was never something that was meant. It was never meant to be. So as sad as, you know, all of it was, I finally came to terms with losing my dad. And, you know, if you read what I sent to you, I just kind of stormed out of the house that day. We had a little argument over something stupid, but I slammed out of the house and I never got to see him again. I never got to tell him I was sorry, that I was being ridiculous, that I didn't mean it, whatever. So I really beat myself up for that. And I did have this issue with my family being so, you know, and the funny part was about, gosh, maybe a year later, my mother moved away and she left the house and my brother lived there.
A year after your father passed, your mom
moved
away. At that point, let me just backtrack quickly. So yeah. Your father passes, right? And you find comfort in your teacher, right? And you guys get married and have a kid, right? Wow, so fast. But then your mom moves away as well. And did she give you guys permission to get married?
She did. She had to sign the paperwork because I was 17.
And what, mm-hmm. did you have a conversation with her about that? Did she have an issue with the age gap, with the dynamic? Nothing. She didn't protest nothing. She just kind of accepted it and was fine.
Yeah. And I never dated. So it wasn't, I really didn't date much at all. I'd never gone to my prom or anything like that. But I think she felt overwhelmed. My family didn't have money and she sort of felt like I was going to a good home. As silly as that might sound, but
you were going to be somebody else's responsibility. Somebody else was going to care for you, right?
Correct. One less person. And like I say, my brother had graduated. So he had a job and he went on to become a police officer. So he was okay. He was doing his thing. He was living at home, but she wasn't necessarily taking care of him. And my sister was a few years younger than me. So she had my sister to take care of. And I wrote a little bit about it, but when something happened, so he died in our home. And when someone is removed from your place where you live and where you see them every day, it's a different way to grieve. It hits you in a different way, because if they're not with you all the time, you don't miss those things, those daily things. They're not sitting at the table every night for dinner. Their car's not in the driveway, you know, those things. So I think it was more than my mother could see every single day, to wake up in the bed that she shared with him and he wasn't there. And so her running away was different than mine. She ran away I call it running away from home, but she got a job at a farm in upper New York State working with horses, which she had done years before she had met my dad. So they had given her a house to live in. My sister went with her. So it worked out for her. So we all kind of went through the grieving process in our own way. And none of it was maybe healthy, but maybe it wasn't unhealthy. I mean, we could have done other things. We could have turned to drugs, or, you know, there could have been something worse that we could have done. But of course, we didn't even know what to do. What's the right way to do something you've never done before? And no one really helped us with that. So it was just a weird time for me. And after a couple of years, I realized that this wasn't what I wanted and how I wanted my life to be. And we did end up divorcing, and my mother did end up moving back home and you know, living her life there. But it took a couple of years, and it was a different path that we all took.
Yeah. And you didn't have any relatives? Was it just pretty much your immediate family, like a nuclear family kind of dynamic that you guys had? No grandparents?
So my mom's parents had passed away when I kind of remember my grandmother. I was young. I never knew my grandfather. And on my father's side, his dad died when he was young, before I was born. And so I did have my grandmother, my dad's mother, and my dad's brother. But if you can imagine, so that was it. That was our family. And my grandmother was devastated because I'm losing a child.
Your mom didn't have any siblings?
She did, but they weren't local. Okay. They were in different states. So we would see them occasionally, but there was no support system, things like that. So it was just our little immediate family. Mm. And like I say, with my grandmother, she just never got over it either. Because you know, here she was in her, I think she was in her 49, 50, she was maybe in her 70s, I can't quite remember, but she was with it, young and zipping around, and lost her son. And so it was tragic for her. So the kids, and I'm not blaming anyone, I just want to point that out here. I don't hold a grudge against anyone in my family for anything at all. I think everyone deals with things in a different way, and there's no really right or wrong way. You can't judge that. So for me, I was never angry with my mother that she signed me away to get married or whatever, and she was dealing with her own grief. I just can't imagine what she was going through. So at the end of the day, at the end of all of this, everyone loves each other. There was never a family issue because of it, but it was how we all dealt with something differently. And so when I wrote my book, that was one of the first chapters I wrote about, because I'm definitely healed and beyond that. But I think it's important because that one event that happened could have changed my entire life. I would not be sitting here with you today if I had chosen a different path at any point along the way. And so I think that we go through things and they help us get stronger and learn. It's all a kind of a learning curve, and there isn't one right way either. There just isn't.
Yeah. I can only imagine that was like you kind of like, just, you were in shock. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I can only assume it's probably out of shock as well, and trying to numb and maybe even seek some kind of father figure. When did that shock go away?
I realized a few things, that I didn't really know him very well. It wasn't my choice. I was easily led at the time because I was in such a state. And so for all those reasons, I just knew his life and his lifestyle was not what I wanted for my life.
And what was that lifestyle?
So he had some health issues, which I found out afterwards. I mean, I knew he had some health issues, but I did not know that his health issues had led him to be a drug addict, a prescription drug addict. And when I learned of that, right after we were married, he tried to get help and really spent the rest of his life trying to get help. Now, he could function. He was still teaching. He was still, you know, he had a home. He raised my daughter. But it was a problem, and it just wasn't the life I wanted to live. I knew that that was not what I wanted to do. Always worrying if he's taking medication, when he didn't come home, you know, he would get it. And at the time, he would get it. It was all from hospitals and doctors freely gave him. But he was taking, at his worst, probably 50 prescription painkillers a day.
Wow.
So, he had a real built up a tolerance, and he had a strong addiction. So it was best for me to not stay. And he ended up dying of, he had done so much damage to his body over the years that was eventually what ended up happening. And in hindsight, like I say, I look at my family now and where I am in my life right now and the things that I've accomplished, that it doesn't have to be financially, but just the places I've gone, the things I've done, the things I've seen, that would have never happened if I didn't leave. But where would I be if I didn't leave, right? So that was the first step.
Yeah. And what gave you the courage to leave?
I don't even really think I had courage. I was afraid, but I did it anyway. I just did it anyway. And he did not let me take my daughter. He would not let me take her.
Wow.
So that was a tough time for me as well, because as a mom, you feel like you're the one raising your child, right? But I also knew that I didn't have the financially, I didn't want to be, and I had seen this done. I was working, bartending, waitressing, whatever I could do to make ends meet. And I saw with my own eyes people leaving their children in their car at night working. A couple of people. This wasn't the norm, okay? But I remember thinking I would never, that's not. My daughter needed to be in a home. She needed to be safe. She needed to be in a bed. And so there were a lot of things that, and that's why I did it. But people really looked down on me. And it was hard to, because I knew out of the two of us, I was doing the right thing. I was not going to, you know, he was always trying. It wasn't like he was passed out or anything like that. But it was just the fact that he was taking this medication that, you know, it had to alter him in some way, although he was completely functioning. But I had to do it for me. He wouldn't let me take her. And then I decided that I just had to hold my head up and keep going. And that's what I did. So I had to bite my tongue. I didn't want to be the person that said, well, he's, you know, whatever. And so therefore I was there all the time. If I wasn't working, I would go over there. So I made sure to have a very good relationship with him, and you know, we vacationed together even after I was married, my husband, and we would all vacation together. So, and it wasn't weird, but it was kind of, you know, I wanted to raise my daughter as well. And he understood that. And so it worked out fine, but there was a little part of me that always wanted to, you know, just sort of be there and keep my eyes open. But yeah, so that was a tough pill to swallow, no pun intended, but to be a mom and not to have her full time.
I can only imagine. Well, I'm interested to know, you know, if there was any triggering incident, if there was the last straw for you, right? Because I asked you earlier, you know, what gave you the strength to leave, right? And you kind of talked about it, but you didn't really stay a moment. And I was just curious to know if there was a moment that you know, whether you saw your daughter, see him taking the pill or something that made you like, I can't do this no more. You know, I really need to leave this situation.
That's a great question. And immediately I can tell you, I don't even have to think about it. The moment for me was I was pregnant with my daughter, and all my friends had gone off to school. They had gone off to college. And I had one particular friend that lived nearby. And I'm just going to back up by saying, I knew when my dad died. So as we were getting into senior year and we're looking at colleges and everything, I knew my family didn't have the money to send me to college. And so part of probably leaving was another way of me hiding the fact that I couldn't afford to go to college, right? The way things happened. And, you know, then I met this guy and he asked me to marry him. And I thought, okay, because what will I ever amount to anyway? And so that was part of it. So one of my best girlfriends was in college at the time, and I was pregnant, and she invited me to come and spend the night in her dorm with her and her roommates. And I went there. Now, this was my daughter's 39, so 40 years ago. Maternity clothes were not cute. If I was pregnant today, I could probably look super cute, but I didn't then. I remember exactly what I was wearing. I was wearing this denim jumper. It was the size of a tent. You could fit a whole family in there. I had this huge denim jumper on. And I'm at the school and I'm in the dorm room, and I was uncomfortable because I was kind of big. I was a ways along at the time. And the girls were sitting in a room and they were very nice to me, but I didn't belong there. They were chatting about things that I would never get to chat about, and school and boys and dating and parties. I'd never done any of that. And I remember sitting there thinking, wow, my life, this will never be part of my life. I went from 17 to, well, actually I was 16 at the time, but I turned 17 a couple of months later to being a mom. It was like I was in the twilight zone. I missed out on a whole period. But at that time, even though I remembered and it felt like a dagger in my heart, I also did not have the strength or the anything to do anything but stay the course that I had chosen and have this baby and try to do the right thing. But at that moment, it became real to me. Up until then, it never hit me up until that day that I was in that college dorm room. And yeah, so that was a big turning point for me. So nothing happened until down the road, but that was the moment where my mind shifted.
And so your mind shifted. And then what did you have envisioned for your life then at that moment? You were going to have this baby, but was there a different life that you thought of, you know, for yourself?
Yeah, I just started looking around at all the friends that were going to college, or they would come home and get together, and, you know, they would have to stop by and visit me because I had the baby and whatnot. And I just realized that I had really given up a big portion of my life. And it is a big deal because I have a son who's 27 and he's handsome, he's smart, he went to college, he dates here and there, but he's 27. A lot of my friends will say, oh, John doesn't have a girl yet, you know, he's not married. And I said, and John knows the same thing. So I'm very open with my kids. The story is not new to them. But they know I'll support whatever they do, but don't feel like you need to be in a marriage or a relationship or even have children to complete you. Do what you want to do, because finally I'm at the age that my youngest just graduated during this COVID pandemic in June. She graduated from high school. So for the first time in my life at age 58, I'm able to do my own thing. And so that's the sacrifice that you make. Even though I ended up getting divorced, I knew I couldn't be in that world. I'm a runner. I have an organic farm. I'm not saying I don't have a cocktail here and there, but I love to live this clean and sober and adventurous life, because that's who I always was. And I think I knew it somehow. And I just looked at what it would be, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And it was hard. It was hard because, like I say, people, there was a lot of judgment, but I don't regret it. I don't regret it. And even with my daughter now, we talk about it, and she totally is so supportive of me and understands everything. So.
And what relationship did you have? Because interesting thing about me, I was also raised by my father. So my biological parents are not together. And I was raised by my father and my stepmom, who I call my mom. And I have a very close relationship with her, with both of my mothers. But I have an extremely close relationship with my stepmom, right? Because she raised me. Did that change the dynamic with you and your daughter being her living with your ex-husband, right? Being raised by your ex-husband versus being raised by you? Because did she come to live with you once you remarried, or did that have a role in your relationship in any way?
Yeah, she never lived with me. She would come and stay with me, but we lived very close. So I could have her sleep over and then just drive her to the bus. So it wasn't, she felt comfortable in her home, and I couldn't imagine. All I could compare it to was my parents didn't divorce, but my family fell apart. And there is some comfort of being in your own space. And I didn't want to take that away from her. Sometimes it hurt me because she was more attached to her dad, but he spoiled her. I'm not that kind of a mom anyway. I don't spoil or shower with gifts. I'm very, very, what's the word I want to use? Practical. I'm practical. Everyone has what they need, but we don't go above and beyond. And her dad really sort of bought her all kinds of things. And I just didn't want to, for example, the tooth fairy. She lost her very first tooth when she was overnight with me. So it was a big deal for me to take a $5 bill. And mind you, I worked probably 7 days a week. And it was a big deal for me to take a $5 bill and put it under her pillow. And the next tooth she lost was at her dad's, and she got a $20 bill. So I just thought, okay, well, I'm not going to play this game.
But yeah, no competition here.
No, I was out. But we honestly, it took her, you know, and here it is, another chapter in my story. My daughter suffers with bipolar. She has borderline personality disorder, depression, OCD, anxiety. So she's got a lot of things which really developed in her 20s. And I can understand her, right? It was, I'm like, go for a run. Let's do yoga. You know, let's do something. You've got to. And so she was never diagnosed with those things until a few years ago. But the point I'm making is that all of our great relationship and healing together has been probably in these last 10 years. So when her dad was sick and dying, and when she was finally diagnosed, when we could finally understand each other. So she is, I didn't write some things about her dad in my book, because I had grandchildren and I just didn't want it. It wasn't that kind of book. I wanted, you know, it's silver linings. I wanted it to be a quick, easy read. I could easily write a book that goes much deeper, but that wasn't the thought for this. But throughout, I had written a chapter about Jennifer and her mental illness, and she did not even want to read it before it was published. She completely trusted that I would do it the right way. And so to me, that goes a long way. It says a lot about our relationship that she would just trust me so much to put her private, something so private and difficult out there, because she knew I would do it in a way that I could help others and that I wouldn't harm her in the process. And so we're really good. We're really good. I talk to her every single day.
I'm so happy to hear that. I'm so happy. I think it's beautiful when parents can have good and healthy relationship with their children. I know that, you know, there's different stages that we have with our parents, you know, when things, we don't necessarily communicate as well as we could, right? But it's great when you can overcome those stages and get to a place where you guys really have healthy communication, you know, where you know that she knows that you got her back. She trusts you, you know, that you can talk about this challenge that she has, but in a way that respects her, right? And doesn't exploit her in any way. And I commend you for, you know, opening up about that, you know, because there are a lot of parents who have that kind of struggle with their children and don't know what to do. So, and hopefully by you sharing this story, they can have hope that, you know, their relationship with their children will get better. You know, Susan, you've just shared with us a bunch of things that has happened, right? You know, you've shared with us, you know, that you're a writer, right? What happened to your father, then becoming a wife, and then a young mom, and then finally finding the courage and strength to leave that relationship, having realized that this partner is addicted to prescription drugs, and this is not a life that you want, right? And then later, you know, all the other challenges with your children. What are the other steps along that journey? You know, any other transformations along that journey to you becoming this incredible woman that you are?
That's a great question, because we don't just hop in and suddenly change our life. So a lot of things happen. And I think for me, being involved in working in a restaurant, because that is what I did, that's what I knew. So you see a lot of people that are unhappy. You see a lot of addiction. A lot of people are settling. And I realized that was not the life for me either. It was a great transition for me to be doing something like that, because I could work every day. I could take extra shifts. I could make money and put it away, because I had to take care of myself. Now, I wasn't getting child support. I wasn't getting alimony. I didn't live at home. I was completely on my own. I'd never even owned a car before. So I had to do all these things. And so working in the restaurant business, I learned a lot about people and I learned a lot about myself. I became a great listener as a bartender. You know, you listen to people's problems. They're sitting there, you know, drinking, you know, they're not drinking just because they, you know, want to have a cocktail. They're drinking something away. And so I became a great listener. I became a great friend. And I really learned how to be a great leader, great customer service. I learned how to handle conflict very well. But I knew this was not the life I wanted to live. But in doing so, there was a lot of learning there. And I going back to school was not an option. Now I know it could have been an option. In my mind, I had shut that door. All my friends were no longer in school. The money I made, I needed to live on it. And I couldn't imagine any more time in the day putting into studying or whatever. but I always felt that I was better than a minimum wage job or just being a waitress or a bartender. And I say just, my daughter's waitressing now. It's fabulous. Yeah, I know you can earn wonderful money doing it. It's great and it served me well. I didn't want that life. And so in doing that, I realized that the only way I could ever really make it was to become an entrepreneur. And I really had to give myself those pep talks because people would tell me all the time, oh, you're so wonderful. Could you wait on us? We love you, you know, this and that. And so I realized that I was smart. I was talented. I did have talent, but I just had to figure out a way to take what I was passionate about, whatever that might be, and turn it into a paycheck on my own. So I did a few different things over the years. One of the things I did was I owned a bakery. My mother was a fabulous baker. So was my dad. And let me tell you, I can bake the most amazing things. And so there was a bakery in town. I ended up buying this bakery. I did it for 8 years. I became a master cake decorator. There's also a little blip in there about that and the trials and tribulations, but it's a lot of work and you work very hard and it's not even 7 days a week. It's more. It's 24 hours a day. And so I ended up selling the bakery and I opened a house cleaning business. And like I was saying before, I live in that same area I grew up in and we have a lot of weekend people. So they come for the weekend, but then during the week they go back to work and they don't want to come next weekend and have to change the sheets and make the beds and clean the house. They want it all set for them. So I had this fabulous little business and one of the houses that I cleaned for a weekend family had a faulty railing in it, which I did not know, but it led up to a spiral bedroom and the railing looked over into the living room. And in hindsight, they had to take that railing out every time to haul furniture up there. Well, I grabbed onto the railing to dust beyond it and I fell 14 feet head first. And it could have killed me because when you fall like that, your bones break and then you have internal injury. So my pelvis shattered, my back broke, but it was a miracle. I mean, it took months and years to recover from those injuries, but there's nothing like perspective when you have a life-threatening accident to really look at your life and say, what am I going to do? And pay it forward. And that incident, the short version, changed my whole life because from that, I became a runner. I really knew that this is your body. This is where you live. And to make the most of it. And I became a vegan. I'm not a vegan now, but I practiced that for 5 years, really studied nutrition and not just what I was putting into my body, but putting into my mind. So that was a huge point in my life where I really reflected on what I wanted to be and do. And I had my son as well, and then afterwards had two more children, my two youngest. But I loved being a mom, but being an entrepreneur was my calling. I wanted to help people. So what I do is very different. So a lot of people will become an entrepreneur, and it's a certain thing. And sometimes people will say to me, what is it that you do? How do you make money? And how does this work? And what do you do? And really, I found that, and I tell people this all the time, figure out what you're passionate about. I don't care what it is. What makes you jump out of bed in the morning? And find a way to get paid for it. And it might not be that exact thing, but somehow something. Because I feel now I'll never retire. I'll never stop working because I love what I do. I love making an impact. And my book which is, you know, sort of it's something else I do. So I have several streams of income. But writing my book was so important to me because, as I'm sharing with you in this short time, and I'm just loving it. I can't tell you how great this feels to be sharing with you. But as I'm sharing a little bit of my life in this short time, it really was important to me that all those things that I had gone through, I've met someone who's gone through something similar somehow. So my stories aren't unique. The names may have changed, the little different details, but everyone has been through something similar. And I thought the reason I'm able to help so many people is because I can relate, because I've been there, because I understand. And I wanted to put my stories in a book to help people. Because what I've learned in my coaching business is that, say, for example, if I'm helping someone with weight loss, because that's where they're struggling, and I sit down and get to talk to them and get to know them, there's more to it. And so I've been able to help people. Sure, we can follow almost any diet. It doesn't even matter. We don't have to talk. It doesn't matter, because if you're strict and you follow it and you burn more calories than you consume, you can lose weight, right? But what's preventing people from getting to that point? It's all the other stuff, all the things we've been through in our life that we've told ourselves we're not good enough, we're not smart enough, I don't have a college education, my dad died, my family doesn't have any money. All the things, I'm injured, I can barely walk, you know, I couldn't run a mile. I've run 36 miles at a clip without stopping. The girl that fell and shattered her whole body.
That's so incredible.
But my point is that you'll hear the people that do the most amazing things when you hear their stories. That drives me. So it drove me to want to help more people realize I'm not the only one that can do something awesome. Other people along the way, they don't even know that I've listened to their podcasts. I've watched them on YouTube. I've sat in the audience when they were a speaker. They don't even know that they gave me the belief in myself to do my work, to pay it forward, to help others. So that's what gets me out of bed every morning. If I can just help one person do one thing and just change their thought process and the belief in themselves, whatever it may be. So my work will never be done. It'll never be done.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. That's so beautiful, Susan. And you know, and that's in alignment with what I'm trying to do also with my podcast, right? Because, you know, part of me, you know, growing is also, like you said, like there are different people you hear their stories and you feel you're like, oh wow, my story is not unique, right? And their ability to overcome and achieve is what gives me strength to also overcome and achieve. And so for me, you know, my goal with this platform is really to have people, to connect people to ideas and stories so that they can see themselves and live better lives, right? And that's exactly what you're doing. So I'm so, you know, I'm so grateful again that you agreed to come on this podcast, that you saw yourself in one of the stories. I don't know which story in particular resonated with you, but you were courageous enough to reach out to me and agree to come here and to share it, because, you know, I would have not known, you know. And I hope that other people who are tuning in also hear your story and are inspired and empowered to tell their story and come and hopefully come on the show as well and share.
I would love to just say thank you for letting me share here. Because the work I do, I see you doing that. And what initially caught my eye was Turning Point Diaries. And that spoke to me because I knew exactly what it was. I didn't have to even listen to your podcast. I did listen to be sure I knew I was right, but it made so much sense to me. And what I love is the paying forward of it. So I love seeing your work because I can't help everyone, right? We're all put here together to help each other. And you know people I don't know, and we go and we divide and we conquer and we teach and we pour belief into people. So you're amazing. I have never smiled so much on a podcast. I've had a smile on the whole time. And some of the things I've talked about today have been a little hard to talk about and upsetting or whatever. Oh gosh, I'm so sorry. My puppy knows I'm in here. This never happens. But so all these things but it makes me happy because I know I can help someone with them. And that's what you're doing. I love it.
I love that you love it so much that you reached out, right? And I'm so, you know, it's a blessing. It's truly, truly a blessing, you know, because I could have not imagined at this very point, you know, so early on, you know, because when I started my podcast, I'm like, I'm just going to reach out to people I know who have stories who are comfortable enough to coming on. But my intention and hope was that other people want that for themselves. And, you know, and I'm so grateful that you have come on here and you saw that. You saw my mission, right? And you believed in it, and you trusted, you know, you trusted this platform. And I'm so grateful. And I've been smiling as well. It's been just a wonderful conversation. And I thank you so much again, Susan, for coming on here and sharing your story. And it's truly raw. It's insightful and deeply, deeply inspiring. And I know that whoever is listening is going to take a lot from here, from this, from your message, and from your life story. So thank you again. Thank you.
You're adorable. Thank you so much. And I just can't wait to get to know you better.
Yeah, we'll definitely be in touch.
Absolutely.
Be in touch. But quickly, I just want you to put a plug for where people can find you and whatnot.
Sure. So my website is probably the best way to connect with me everywhere. It is SusanVWheeler.com. And there's a link to my book, which is on Amazon. My Facebook is linked up. I'm Susan V. Wheeler on Facebook. I'm Susan_V. Wheeler on Instagram. I'm big on social media because I love to give, as I call it, free content as much as I can. So when you go to my Facebook page, you'll always find positivity or tips, or there's never anything negative. If I have anything like that, I talk to my girlfriend in private. So my social media is for everyone to grow and learn.
Okay. And that's Susan Wheeler as well, right?
Susan V. Don't forget the V.
Susan V. Wheeler. Yep. I'll make sure to include that when I tag you once the story's published.
Sure.
Okay.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much, Susan. It's so wonderful talking to you. And
looking
forward to furthering our conversation in other ways.
Awesome. Okay. Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, y'all. Thank you for tuning in. Please remember to subscribe, leave a review, and share the episode. Be sure to also follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Turning Point Diaries. Kume, until next time.
Theme music by Exile Dynamics, featuring More Box.